But now, when it has been surmounted, when Europe, rid of this nightmare, can again draw breath freely and at least enjoy a healthier sleep, we, whose duty is wakefulness itself, are the heirs of all the strength which the struggle against this error has fostered. It amounted to the very inversion of truth and the denial of the perspective, the fundamental condition of life, to speak of spirit and the good, as Plato spoke of them. Indeed, one might ask, as a physician, how did such a malady attack that finest product of antiquity, Plato? Had the wicked Socrates really corrupted him? Was Socrates, after all, a corrupter of youths, and deserved his hemlock? But the struggle against Plato, or, to speak plainer, and for the people, the struggle against the ecclesiastical oppression of millenniums of Christianity, for Christianity is Platonism for the people, produced in Europe a magnificent tension of soul, such as had not existed anywhere previously. With such a tensely strained bow, one can now aim at the furthest goals. As a matter of fact, the European feels this tension as a state of distress, and twice attempts have been made in grand style to unbend the bow. Once by means of Jesuitism, and the second time by means of democratic enlightenment, which, with the aid of liberty of the press and newspaper reading, might in fact bring it about that the spirit would not so easily find itself in distress. The Germans invented gunpowder, all credit to them, but they again made things square. They invented printing. But we, who are neither Jesuits, nor Democrats, nor even sufficiently Germans, we good Europeans are free, very free spirits. We have it still, all the distress of spirit and all the tension of its bow, and perhaps also the arrow, the duty, and who knows, the goal to aim at. Sils Maria, Upper Engadin, June 1885. Chapter 1. Prejudices of Philosophers. 1. The will to truth, which is to tempt us to many a hazardous enterprise, the famous truthfulness of which all philosophers have hitherto spoken with respect. What questions has this will to truth not laid before us? What strange, perplexing, questionable questions! It is already a long story, yet it seems as if it were hardly commenced. Is it any wonder that we at last grow distrustful, lose patience, and turn impatiently away? That this Sphinx teaches us at last to ask questions ourselves? Who is it really that puts questions to us here? What really is this will to truth in us? In fact, we made a long halt at the question as to the origin of this will, until at last we came to an absolute standstill before a yet more fundamental question. We inquired about the value of this will. Granted, we want the truth. Why not rather untruth and uncertainty, even ignorance? The problem of the value of truth presented itself before us. Or was it we who presented ourselves before the problem? Which of us is the Oedipus here? Which the Sphinx? It would seem to be a rendezvous of questions and notes of interrogation. And could it be believed that it at last seems to us as if the problem had never been propounded before? As if we were the first to discern it, get a sight of it, and risk raising it? For there is risk in raising it. Perhaps there is no greater risk. 2. How could anything originate out of its opposite? For example, truth out of error, or the will to truth out of the will to deception, or the generous deed out of selfishness, or the pure sun-bright vision of the wise man out of covetousness. Such genesis is impossible. Whoever dreams of it is a fool, nay, worse than a fool. Things of the highest value must have a different origin, an origin of their own. In this transitory, seductive, illusory, paltry world, in this turmoil of delusion and cupidity, they cannot have their source, but rather in the lap of being, in the intransitory, in the concealed God, in the thing in itself, there must be their source.